many of you know what castor oil is? How many of you had it growing up? Now, back in the day, the old timers, they believed it was the cure-all for just about every ailment. Now, I did some research. Castor oil is a vegetable oil pressed from castor beans. It's colorless to yellow color with a distinct taste and odor. Castor oil is used in the manufacturing. Now, listen to this, as far as a cure-all. Soaps, lubricants, hydraulic and brake fluids, paints, dyes, coatings, inks, cold-resistant plastics, whatever that is, waxes, polishes, nylon, pharmaceuticals, perfumes. Then now the old-timers, they swore by this stuff. Now, these young bucks came along and they said, oh, no, that's not good for anything. So the scientists have recently been doing research and they have verified that castor oil does help and so show some improvement, listen to this list, to arthritis, to acne, to eliminating fine lines and wrinkles. I'm selling this afterwards in the lobby. Listen, they say it's good for hair growth. I wonder if that's why Tracy brought that for me. It improves your immune system. It helps with ringworms. It heals dry and cracked heels. It induces labor. It relieves sunburn. It thickens your eyebrows. It removes moles. It perks up your ferns. It hydrates chapped lips. It removes symptoms of migraines. It soothes mouths and sores. And it relieves or helps relieve insomnia. Castor oil. Now, just in case some of you old timers, there are two types of castor oil. So this is known as regular castor oil. Probably most of your parents and grandparents used Jamaican black castor oil. So they would roast those beans before they would go and get all of the juice out of it. So it wasn't clear castor oil. It was dark black castor oil. And they say it was a lot more potent. Now everybody would say, I want some. I want some. Sign me up. Give me some of that. There's just one problem with castor oil. It tastes horrible. The worst thing that you can imagine, and it's just worse than that. It tastes awful. But a lot of mothers growing up, every night would have to take a teaspoon of castor oil because it's good for you. Well, we come to the Bible. What is the cure-all for Christians? What is the one trait or the one characteristic that will help every ailment a Christian ever has? Now, I just go ahead and warn you. It tastes awful. I'll go ahead and warn you. It's going to take a lot for you to get it down. But the cure-all for every Christian in the Christian life, and really it works for the non-Christian as well, is humility. It's humbling yourself. So this morning, I want you to see three requirements of humility. Sermon's entitled, The Cure-All in the Christian Life. So this humility, I mean, it's the cure for the lost person. You cannot get saved unless you humble yourself, admit that you're a sinner in need of a Savior. Humility is required for salvation. But humility is also required for sanctification. You cannot live the Christian life without humility. So don't say, oh, well, yeah, this is whatever. No. This is for you, mister. And I want to give you three requirements today of humility. Number one, you must eliminate partiality. You must eliminate partiality. You're in Romans chapter 12. Notice verse 16. Be of the same mind one toward another. Now, Paul's not trying to say Christians must all think exactly alike. He's not trying to say, well, Christians must be clones. No. What he's saying is we as Christians, as followers of Jesus, must live our lives in harmony. Harmony says, even though I don't have children, I care about the kids in our community, in our church, so I want to help meet their needs. Harmony says, the senior saints want to sacrifice for the youth. And the youth come along and say, hey, we would not be here if it wasn't for our senior saints, so we want to go and rake their yard. That is what he's talking about. Be of the same mind one for another. Live in harmony one for the mother. The mark of a mature Christian is not that they all are alike, but they're all driven for the same purpose. Now, I'm getting anxious because it's about football season. And football season, especially college football season, is just around the corner. Now, here's what I find so amazing about college football. You have people, whatever the team is, if you like a good team or if you like a bad team, whatever, that's not the point of the story. You go and you sit down with all of these people dressed alike with you. And then the opposing team's over there on the other side. I mean, you have every kind of occupation under the sun. You have every kind of background under the sun. You have every kind of political persuasion under the sun. You have every kind of interest and dislike and like under the sun. You have different taste and you have different preferences. I mean, these people that are all gathered together, that are all dressed alike, they could not agree on anything but one thing. They like those little boys down there running around on that playground throwing a ball around. And they get excited about it. They get fired up about it. They do kind of crazy stuff. They paint their faces and they get there early and they stay late with people that they don't even jive with. You say, why? Because they're there for one purpose. They like that team. Now, if that is true for sports, which is wood, hay, and stubble, and that's going to burn up as useless, how much more important is it for Christianity? Hold on a second. How much more important is it for Christians to say, you know what? Some of this stuff just doesn't matter, so I'm not going to be an old fuddy-duddy. I'm here for Jesus. Even though they might have a little bit of different taste on some things than I do. Now, if you don't believe me yet, look up. You're in Romans chapter 12. Look up at verse 10. Romans 12, verse 10. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love. In honor, preferring one another. It's, no. Let's do it your way. No, I don't have to have it my way. No. Let's do it your way. No. Really. Let's go to where you want to go. No. Really. I don't mind eating that food that I absolutely detest. If you like it, let's go eat Chinese food. It's all good in the hood. It doesn't matter. Oh, you like McDonald's? I abhor McDonald's, but that's okay. It's preferring one another. There's a lot of things that do not matter that we as Christians get tied up in knots about. And it just shows that we are very prideful individuals. Look at the last part of verse 16. Be of the same mind one to another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. So the first phrase deal with our stubbornness. It's not all about you and getting your way. It's not all about your timetable and you getting everything when you want it. And the second phrase deals with your snobbiness. Now listen, a lot of us Now, you look good in your little suits, in your little pretty outfits. A lot of us are just snobs. A lot of us, come on, are just snooty. A lot of us look down our noses at people that may be a different color or a different background or a different academic class or a different economic level, or maybe their appearance is different than your appearance, and you just look down your nose and look at them. They're just... And he says, hey, don't be so high-minded. Don't be so uppity, but lower yourself to people that you think are beneath you. Let me illustrate like this. Will the white-collar guy hang out with the blue-collar guy? Will the white man hang out with the black man? Will the doctor and the mechanic just be buddies because of Jesus? Will the businesswoman and the stay-at-home mom just text back and forth to encourage each other? Will the PhD be taught in Sunday school by the college dropout? See, a lot of times we are so high-minded, we are so uppity. Oh, I'm not going to listen to what that guy has to say. Great example of this is in Luke chapter 14, verse 12. This is what Jesus said. Going to confront some of our mindsets. This said he also to him that bade him, when thou makest a dinner or a supper, call not thy friends, nor thy brethren, neither thy kinsmen, nor thy rich neighbors, lest they also bid thee again, and recompense be made thee. Now, if we ever have a cookout, if we ever have a kid's play date, who do we invite? Our friends, our family, the people that we like, the people that we feel safe around, the people that we want to impress. Look what Jesus says, verse 13. But when thou makest a feast... Our vernacular, when you got a cookout, backyard cookout, when you throw a cookout, call the poor, the maimed, physically or emotionally, the lame, the blind, and thou shalt be blessed. A lot of us have cookouts all the time with our buddies, with our families. Do you realize that? Now, it doesn't say that you're not blessed if you have your mother-in-law over, so I'm not saying that. But he's saying, hey, call the poor, call the lame, call the blind, call the people that you would never associate with, because that is humility. That's what Christianity is all about. But look on in the verse, that thou shalt be blessed, for they cannot recompense thee, they cannot reward thee. Last phrase. For thou shalt be rewarded at the resurrection of the just. Do you get that? That is so easy. When you reach out to people different than you. Different economic class. Different racial class. Different educational class. Different political class. Did you get me? Some of you are so stuck on your political party. And political parties are not in heaven. And I'm not sure Jesus is anywhere near political parties. Jesus is the answer, not Republicans, Democrats, Independents, or anything else. And we get so tied up in these earthly man-made stuff rather than Jesus. Jesus says, hey, when you get outside of your bubble, look what he says, you will be rewarded at the resurrection of the just. You will be rewarded at the judgment seat of Christ. You will be rewarded when you get to heaven for not being so tribal. All of us just like to stay in our little cliques with our little plus four and no more. And yes, we are just our little group of buddies. Good. What's wrong with asking the guy across the tracks to come and join your little groups of buddies? That's what he's saying. Chuck Swindoll tells a story. Kind of summarizes this. The kids in his neighborhood, they got together and they built a clubhouse. And all of the guys, they came out together and they were putting together the rules, because if you have a clubhouse, you got to have rules. So they came up with three. Here they are. Number one, nobody act big. Number two, nobody act like you're worthless either. Number three, everybody just act medium. That's that verse. As Christians, we don't have big shots. As Christians, we're not supposed to have the VIPs. Let's just all act normal. Yeah, all of us have hang-ups. All of us have issues. But we have too many uppity people. Let's just be like Jesus and be humble. Number one, eliminate partiality. Number two, assassinate pride. Look at the last phrase in this verse. Be not wise in your own conceits. It means don't be high-minded in your own opinions. The natural man, the fleshly man, you are addicted to pleasing you. Our first thoughts are to pamper ourselves. Our highest dreams are for ourselves. Our grandest gestures are to take care of ourselves. Now look what he says. Don't be wise. Don't be a scholar about you, about gratifying you, about satisfying you. It's called pride. It's called being stuck on yourself. It's called being, pardon me, stuck up. And you say, well, that guy down there, three rows in front of me, he needs to hear this. I'm not stuck up. Listen, all of us are stuck up. We want our own way. We want our own way when we want it. This is me this week. Things don't go accordingly to my plans, so I'm going to fix them. But not everybody is on my schedule, and so I'm like just going crazy because everybody in the world is working at just putting along, and I'm trying to move at the speed of light, and nobody else is that. And then I'm studying this passage, and God says, Neil Jackson, you know what your issue is? And I said, yes, these slow pokes around me. He said, no, the issue is pride. You want your way, period. Do you realize Ezekiel says the very first sin in the universe was pride? Satan, he didn't want to knock God off. He just wanted to be like God. And Ezekiel tells us that his heart was filled with pride because he was so beautiful. Do you realize that pride is the essence of every sin? Boil it down. You go out, you pick the sin. The core issue is pride. Do you realize that pride is not disliked by God? It is abhorred by God. It is hated by God. It is anathema to God. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 5 says, everyone that is of a proud heart, next few words, is an abomination to the Lord. So when I'm so stuck on myself, listen, when I'm so stuck on my way, when I'm so stuck on my preference, a lot of us, we just have preferences. We know it's not right or wrong. It's just kind of what I prefer. When we are so stuck on my stinking preference, God abhors it. God hates it. Now, the only time this phrase, wise in your own conceits, is used in the whole Bible is in Proverbs 26, verse 12. Here's what it says. Seest thou a man wise in his own conceit? Seest thou a man that's stuck on his own opinions? See thou a man that is so stubborn and so bullheaded and so, it's just pride. Look what he says. There's more hope of a fool than of him. So forget your tie. Forget your perfume and your cologne. Let's get serious. All of us struggle with pride. The reason y'all were fighting yesterday is pride. The reason the kids fight in the afternoon, they're trying to get their way, it's pride. For the issues you have at work, it's all over pride, and nobody will humble themselves. The issue with you in your life, it's an issue of pride. You say, okay, so how do I fix it? I'm glad you asked. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in His wonderful face. The things of earth will go strangely dim in the light of His glory and the light of His grace. So how do you annihilate? How do you assassinate? How do you destroy pride? Look to God. Jesus said, Matthew 11, verse 29, "Learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart." If there's ever a person that should have been prideful, if there ever a person who knew what was right and should be stuck on his way, it was Jesus. Jesus wasn't like that at all. Wasn't prideful of his rearing. He was the son of a carpenter. Wasn't prideful in his stuff, his resources. Had nowhere to lay his head. Wasn't prideful of his region, where he came from. Can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Wasn't prideful of his reputation. He associated with publicans and sinners, the lowest class of society. He wasn't prideful over his rank. He says, "I am among you who serves." Wasn't prideful about his recognition. He was despised and rejected of men. Wasn't prideful over his resources. He said, "Of myself, I can do nothing but what I see the Father doing." Jesus should have been stuck on himself. And he wasn't. So why are you so stuck on yourself? And why am I so stuck on myself? Why do we refuse to give in over opinions? The Bible says nothing about it. You just have your opinion over your preferences, over your ideologies, not biblical ideologies. This is just what I think. If I were to say, okay, show me from the Bible where you get this, you would be stuttering because the Bible doesn't go a million miles close to it. It's just, there's nothing wrong with your opinions and your preferences. It's just you. How about your pet peeves? When you get all tied in knots over your pet peeves, it's just a sign you're prideful. For Neil Jackson, how about your patience or lack of it? When things are not happening accordingly as you want or as fast as you want, and you're blowing a stack, when smoke is coming out of both of your ears, when you're yelling and fussing and fuming, it's just showing you are prideful. Turn your eyes on Jesus. Look full in His wonderful face. Things of this earth strangely dim. Number two. Assassinate pride. If I haven't got you yet, I'm getting ready to clobber you. So if you're not kind of frustrated with me yet, you will be, so you better buckle your other seatbelt. Look at verse 17. Demonstrate perseverance. Verse 17. Recompense to no man, evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. Now here's what I struggle with in this verse. It's non-negotiable. No loopholes. Humility refuses to get even. Humility refuses. I'm not going to retaliate. Fact of life. Evil happens to Christians. Fact of life. Mistreatments will come down your lane and will knock at your door. So don't be surprised. Wait a minute. This is not fair. You got a pulse. You're breathing. Life's not fair. God says, don't retaliate. God says, don't respond in like manner, doing unjust actions. You say, oh, wait a minute. Exodus 21, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. How about that, buddy? Great verse. Pertaining to governments, not to individuals. It's right for governments to hold people accountable for their actions, not for Christians. He says, recompense to no man. It means in the original language, for any reason, evil for evil. To allow hurt to stay in your possession, to stay in your mind, and you kept hitting that play over and over and over again, would be about as foolish as you carrying around your pet viper, kept it in your pocket. Yeah, this is my pet cobra. Yeah, I just keep it right here close to my heart so it can keep biting me and giving me its poison. And that's what too many of us do every day. And some of us have been doing it for decades and decades and decades. And we just keep hitting play. And this is what I'm going to do. And this is how I'm going to pay them back. And this is how I'm going to show them they should not have done it to me. You say, preacher, look down at verse 19. You say, they're going to walk all over me. They're going to spit on me. I'm just going to be a doormat. Look at verse 19. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. God is far better at dealing with injustices than we are. If He's big enough to take you to heaven, don't you think He can handle your sister-in-law? How about your boss? I mean, you're trusting him for your eternal destiny, but you cannot trust him to deal with your coworker? Really? I just don't think that kind of balances out. He said, hey, I'll take care of him, but I'm not touching him if you're going to retaliate against him. Look at the next verse, verse 20. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink, for in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. God's remedy for dealing with enemies. Be kind to them. Make them brownies and don't put X-lax in it. Send them flowers. Do them good. The best example of this is 1 Samuel. Saul is hunting David. Saul is trying to destroy David. Saul is trying to murder David and his whole family. Finally, David has the chance to off Saul's head. God's already said, you're going to be the next king. This was his chance. I'm going to off his head and just kill him. His conscience would not let him do it. He says, I'm just going to cut off a little bit of his garment so I can just show him I had the chance. And his conscience even convicted him of that. He goes out, he calls Saul, he says, hey, I could have killed you. I didn't. Notice Saul's response on the screen. And it came to pass when David had made an end of speaking these words unto Saul that Saul said, is this thy voice, my son David? And Saul lifted up his voice and
wept. You could see the coworker, the boss, the sister-in-law, whoever it is, melt before your eyes by doing them good. But you want to gossip about them all over town. You want to send them anonymous little hate mail. But look on the verse. He wept and said to David, "Thou art more righteous than I. Thou hast rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded thee evil. Thou hast showed this day how thou hast dealt with me, for as much as when the Lord had delivered me into thy hand," the Lord did it, "thou killest me not. For if a man find his enemy, will he let him go away?" David, it's not natural what you did. Last phrase. "Wherefore the Lord reward thee good, for thou hast for that thou hast done unto me this day." It's what Joseph did with his brothers. They sold him into slavery. They lied about him to his dad. They threw him into a pit. What did he do? He forgave them. He protected them. He pardoned them. He promoted them. Joseph, why would you do this? God's got this. We're out of time. Look at verse 21. "Be not overcome of evil." Don't be like your neighbor. Don't be just like your coworker. Don't be just like the brother-in-law or sister-in-law. Don't be like them. "But overcome evil." You win not by being evil. You overcome evil with good. You win by doing good to those who have mistreated you. And you're showing your humility. Now some of you are saying, yeah, wait a minute. You forgot verse 18. Verse 18. Notice what it says. "If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men." So Paul's a realist. He's saying, there are some people, they're just over the top. They're always going to be a pain in your side. It's a reality. But notice what the next phrase is. "As much as lieth in you." Peaceful relationships are a two-way street. He said, hey, some people are nuts. Some people are crazy and just nobody could deal with them. But you make sure on your end that you're a peacemaker. You make sure on your end that you have made right everything that you've done wrong. You make sure on your end that you're not the one being stubborn and refusing to offer forgiveness and ask for forgiveness. Heard about a couple, married couple, and they were fighting and they were fussing and feuding. It was a humongous blow up. And they did the silent treatment on each other for a week. 7 days they would not speak to the other one. After 7 days, the guy, he wrote his wife a note. "I have to be in Atlanta tomorrow. I have to catch the plane. Can you wake me up at 5:00 in the morning tomorrow?" Refused to give in. Refused to go, "I'm sorry, will you please forgive me?" Refused to even talk to her. Left her a note on her pillow. Next day, he wakes up. It's 7:30. He's furious. He's mad. He's ready to explode. He looks down at the pillow and he sees a note. "It's 5 a.m. Time to wake up." A lot of us are the same way. That's pride. You won't give in. You won't say, "I'm sorry, what I did is so wrong, it's wicked, it's deplorable. Will you forgive me?" You refuse to do it. You'd rather just pout and fume and sulk. Listen to me, God hates it. 17th century, this and I'm done. The rich upper class, they would have these great hunting expeditions
where they would go out and they would take all of their rich friends and all of the politicians and all of the upper class of society. They would go out and they would do these hunting expeditions. And they would take all of their servants with them, and they would take care of their needs, and they would cook, and they would clean, and they would do all of the other stuff. Well, they would bring in the prey from their hunt. They would bring in all of the deer meat, all of the venison. And all of the rich upper class people, they were given the venison. But the servants were not allowed to eat the venison. Venison is not for servants. They got the leftover body parts, leftover organs that nobody wanted, that nobody appreciated. And what they did, they would make this pie out of it, and they would put the vegetables in it. And it came to be known as the servants get to eat humble pie. And they would say, well, the taste just isn't good. But it's good to be humble.